This is Lake Effect from WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jane Hamden. They've served their time, but criminal records and race are holding them back. That's the finding of a Wisconsin researcher now teaching at Princeton. Diva Pager sent impressive young men, black and white, out to apply for jobs in Milwaukee. Her findings are included in the book Marked: Race, Crime, and Finding Work in an Era of Mass Incarceration. She's on the line now from Princeton, New Jersey. Thank you for joining us on Lake Effect.
Thanks so much, Jane.
How did you become interested in this issue of young men, specifically young black men in trouble, spent time in prison? What happens to them after they're released?
Yeah, this is a research project that occurred to me fairly late in my research career as a graduate student. I have a background with interests in racial inequality and had never really thought about the criminal justice system as a relevant institution that I should pay attention to. Actually, the first idea I got for this project came to me while I was volunteering at a transitional housing authority office in Madison. And I would meet young men who were jobless and homeless and talk to them about some of their experiences. And some of them, one young man in particular who was energetic and charismatic and articulate, couldn't figure out why he was struggling to find work. And when I talked to him about it, he revealed to me that he, earlier in his life, he'd made a big mistake and wound up with a felony conviction, and that this was really causing huge trouble for him in terms of finding work. And that was the first time it really occurred to me that, you know, the criminal justice system has really undergone this massive change in the past 30 years, this massive expansion, and we haven't really thought much about what the implications of that expansion might be for the prospects of those coming out.
So Greg is the young man that you write about in the book.
That's right.
And you found for your experiment or for your research several Gregs, people who could go out into the community and present themselves as candidates for jobs, but it turns out they had dummy resumes. Tell about your research.
Sure. So what I did to try to investigate the effect of a criminal record on labor market opportunities was to construct an experiment. And in this experiment, I hired four young men who were college students in Milwaukee to pose as job applicants for entry-level jobs throughout the city in Milwaukee. I assigned them fictitious matched resumes that reflected identical levels of education and work experience. And though they were college students, themselves, they were posing as job applicants that only had a high school degree and limited work experience in a range of entry-level jobs. I had two white testers, two white job applicants and two black job applicants who I referred to as testers. And within each pair, I randomly assigned one of the applicants a fictitious criminal record. So they reported to the employer, usually by checking off the box on standard application forms that ask whether or not you've been convicted of a crime. They acknowledged that they had been convicted of a drug felony and had served 18 months in prison. And the pairs randomly varied which member of the team presented himself as having the criminal record so that I could really see how much this criminal record affected their employment prospects, taking away any individual characteristics that may lead applicants to differ in the real world.
Were you surprised by the results? You know, can you blame the average employer for saying, I have an A or B student on the one hand who has nothing negative standing out in their resume to somebody who's dealt drugs, been convicted of dealing drugs in the past?
Yeah, I don't think it's much of a surprise that a criminal record does have a big negative impact on employment prospects. And I certainly wouldn't fault employers for being concerned about hiring someone with a known propensity to commit crime. I guess the purpose of this research is really to think about the broader implications of this pattern. So in the past, when offenders represented a much smaller proportion of the population and a much more severe group of offenders, a criminal record really meant something about your propensity to engage in chronic and serious crime. But over the past 30 years, we've seen this real expansion in the types of crimes and the types of offenders that are brought into the criminal justice system, so that now we also have huge numbers of nonviolent and first-time offenders that are serving time in prison who might otherwise perform just as well as non-offenders and who really do want to get back on their feet and make a better lives for themselves, but they face severe barriers in trying to find employment once they're released.
So you mentioned drug offenses, but are there other felonies that you would add to the list that as a society we should consider handling a different way other than sending the offending person to prison?
Sure. So over time, we've seen a decrease in the number, in the proportion of violent and property offenders that are being sent to prison, and an increase in the proportion of drug offenders and offenders convicted of public order offenses. So these are things like disorderly conduct or public drunkenness, other kinds of things that create social disorder but are not necessarily a huge threat to public safety. And these are people that are being brought into the criminal justice system and then facing big difficulties in trying to reintegrate once they're released.
On the other hand, many cities have taken up a quality of life type prosecutions, you know, cracking down on some of the smaller things that we may have 20 years ago considered smaller offenses, and found success and found that this helps keep order and helps keep residents safe. Did you hear arguments on both sides there?
Absolutely. And I think that's a legitimate perspective of many residents. I guess one of the points I want to make with this research is that in many cases, that's likely to be a short-term solution. So initially, we can put lots of people in jail, we can clean up our streets, but more than 95% of inmates will be released at some point. And to the extent that that contact with the criminal justice system actually makes it more difficult for them to reintegrate into society, we're likely to see growing numbers of ex-offenders who are jobless, who are homeless, who have increasing risk factors that lead them back into lives of crime. And so simply from a perspective about enhancing public safety, I think we all have an interest in promoting the employment and stability of those being released from the criminal justice system.
When you sent out your presentable and personable young students, young men, did you find that it was more about race or was it more about criminal records?
Yeah, so that was one of the surprising things that came out of this study. Everyone expected that a criminal record would have a big negative effect on employment prospects. But in fact, what I found was that a young black man with no criminal history was treated about the same as a white man just released from prison in terms of his chances of finding a job. So race really ended up swamping these effects.
Do you think that you'd find the same results in other cities? The knock on Milwaukee is that it's one of the most segregated and racially polarized cities in the United States.
Yeah, it's a great question, and that was a response I got from a lot of critics following the release of this study. With a colleague, Bruce Western, I actually replicated this research in New York City, which is obviously a large, diverse, cosmopolitan city in which you wouldn't think that these issues about race and criminal background might be as salient. And actually, we find very, very similar effects there.
What kind of reception are you getting to your argument? Are you hearing people say, yes, we have a crisis and we need our young black men to be employable and we need to do all we can to help reintegrate them into society? Or are you hearing them say, no, I've had it, the law and order, the quality of life type argument?
Yeah, so it's been interesting watching the reaction. The sort of tough on crime quality of life constituent is still out there and very strong. But there is this new bipartisan coalition developing around issues of prisoner reentry that's actually taking a very different perspective from the past. I think there's been this realization that tough crime policies are important from one perspective in terms of enhancing public safety. But now we do have this massive number, more than 600,000 inmates being released into our communities every year. And this itself creates potential problems for community safety, for social order. And we actually have to pay attention to these issues as a matter of public policy, not to be soft on criminals, not to try to coddle offenders and provide them with services that they haven't deserved, but actually to create social order, to reduce crime in the long term.
Certainly, there are some people convicted of nonviolent crimes who leave prison ready to make a change, ready to turn their lives around, who would make good employees. But aren't there some people who really are a risk to society, a risk to their employers?
Absolutely. I think there are risks involved. When you ask employers, actually, who have hired ex-offenders in the past what their experiences have been, over 80% of them report having had positive experiences with ex-offender employees. So in general, I think this is a population that can do very well in the workforce, especially for these low-wage jobs. But that, you know, there are still risks that employers realistically face. And I think because of that, it's incumbent on public policy and us as citizens to figure out ways to protect employers against risks and to support that process. So some of this means providing employers with added compensation for hiring potentially risky employees. And some of it is enhancing the role of intermediaries, services that help employers to manage, train, and supervise ex-offenders as they reenter into the workforce. It's that critical time period of reentry where ex-offenders are most prone to recidivism or to returning to crime. But over time, as time passes since the point of release, they grow less and less likely to return to crime, such that after about 6 or 7 years, they start looking exactly like people that have never been arrested at all. And so it's really about supporting employers and ex-offenders through that initial period of reentry that can set people on a path to desistance.
Well, thank you for taking time to tell us about your work.
My pleasure.
Diva Pager is an associate professor of sociology at Princeton University. She conducted research in Milwaukee that's the basis for her book, Marked: Race, Crime, and Finding Work in an Era of Mass Incarceration. Coming up next on Lake Effect, making history in Wisconsin, oddball tidbits that helped define the state, after a break on Lake Effect from WUWM.